When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Sky U Podcast. This is not your host, Chris Goyeufer. He is out sick tonight. We're also missing Street, who is evidently staring into an ocean. We all react to Illinois losses different ways, but we're all respect to him. So this is Blake. I'm also joined by Andy, Gopher Guy 05.
Hello, hello.
So here we are, less than a week removed from another stunning loss of the season. First there's Bowling Green, now we've got 2.0 to Illinois. Andy, now that we're safely removed from the game, how are you feeling about that loss?
Apparently we just really hate the color orange. I mean, that's the only thing I can understand is both, obviously, Bowling Green and Illinois have orange as a large component in their jerseys. But, yeah, no, that was pretty bad. Street and I recorded a great takes, and it actually got censored by the FCC, so we couldn't release it because there were a lot of four-letter words. Not quite the case. We had audio issues. But, there were a lot of four-letter words. What a just absolute pathetic performance by the Gopher offense. Just, mind-blowingly bad. And the defense, after stinking it up for the first 10 minutes of the game, ended up turning around and only giving up 14 points, which is what they need to do. You can't play offense that badly. And believe it or not, the Gophers still control their destiny in the Big Ten West, but it gets a hell of a lot harder, as we'll get into starting this week.
Well, I think one thing Zips talked about on Twitter was after they went down 14-0, like, you just kind of knew. And because, they scored the first two drives and the defense shut them out the rest of the way. And I don't feel like the Gophers ever really threatened. They didn't score until like 4 minutes left in the game. It's one thing to have, one Bowling Green loss in the season, I think. And we were all kind of hoping that had been a wake-up call and they put that behind them. But just to come out after the week that they had, too, they had flex contract extension. They, made the top 25 in the college football rankings. They were alone atop the Big Ten West. Like, they literally had everything going for them. And just in what most people would describe as typical Gopher fashion, just face-planted against a team they really should have beat. And the fact that it came against Brett Bielema, too. And he's still undefeated against Minnesota, which just drives me insane. But I don't know. How are you feeling about the rest of these final three games now that we have the Illinois loss behind us? Does that change your expectations the rest of the season, or what do you think we're in for these next 3 weeks?
Frankly, we always knew that specifically the Iowa game and the Wisconsin game were just going to be, offensive slap fights. The defenses that those two teams have, and honestly that Minnesota has had for the vast majority of this season, have been dominating games. And so, at least prior to last week, you thought you maybe held out some hope that maybe the Gophers would come up with an offensive game plan that might, be able to not just be completely flaccid against those defenses. Now it's a lot more of a concern. I don't necessarily think that, Iowa's offense is going to run up 40 points on the Gophers, but the Gophers got to be able to score some points if they're going to try and win this game. And frankly, after watching them go against Illinois' defense, it does not exactly give confidence against Iowa and Wisconsin, with Indiana just being a random toss-up in the middle there, which could go either way. So, it's kind of alarming, and it doesn't really feel good. And the worst part about it is, and not that, you really expected anything different, but in all the press opportunities that both PJ Fleck and Mike Sanford have had this week, it's not like you're hearing anything that really gives you any confidence going into this week. It's pretty much the, yeah, well, we weren't really ready, and that's on us, and, you know, we just really didn't get into a rhythm, and that was the biggest problem, not the game plan. And it's like, no, it was a game plan. It was a game plan, Mike. The fact that you're running long passing routes when you need 5, 6, 7 yards, and you don't have a receiver within 4 yards of the stick before Tanner Morgan's trying to run for his life. That's not getting Tanner into a rhythm. That's horrible play calling. So, yeah, hopefully they get that cleaned up before Saturday. But no, my confidence level on that is not real high at the moment.
Oh, and the thing that's so frustrating to me is if you look back on their games this year, if they don't get a hot start offensively, they're toast. I mean, this is not a team that, you know, if it nothing worked in the first half, you can trust they adjust at halftime and figure things out. Like every game they've had, where they've scored a lot of points, they scored a lot of points first half and just kept doing what they were doing the second half. There's just no, there seems to be this inability to adjust during the games, particularly on the offensive side of the ball by Mike Sanford. I mean, you look at the defense, the way they figured things out against Illinois, they struggled early, then figured things out. The offense just struggled the whole game. And then on their second to last drive, finally decided to, you know, get the short pass, intermediate passing game going, which look at that. We led to a touchdown, even though that they needed fourth down at the 1 yard line to get that through. So, yes, speaking of offensive ineptitude, this is a great transition to our Iowa preview, because we're witnessing a titanic showdown between Iowa offensive coordinator Brian Ferentz and Minnesota offensive coordinator Mike Sanford to see who can put together the worst offensive game plan. I mean, we know Brian looks forward to this game every year. He always has, they script the first several drives because he just seems to have save all of his best shots for the Minnesota game for whatever reason. So I'll be curious to see how they start on offense. We will see a relatively new quarterback for Iowa, Alex Padilla, their starter last year and to begin this year, Spencer Petras. But in their two losses to Purdue and Wisconsin, he completed only 50% of his passes and threw 4 interceptions. So as you can imagine, they weren't too pleased about that. He only lasted 4 pass attempts against Northwestern last week before they pulled him. And reportedly he has a, excuse me, reportedly he has an injured shoulder that is keeping him out of the game. So we'll see. Alex Padilla, the sophomore quarterback who last week, his first action went was 18-28 for 172 passing yards, led 2 touchdown drives as soon as he got into the game, but then rest of the way was quiet. But yeah, this is not a very effective Iowa offense, I would say. And I say that now, of course, I'm sure they'll, you know, want to put up 20 points in the first half on Saturday, but unusually so, their offensive line has been a problem, even though they have an All-American at center and Tyler Linderbaum. They just haven't been great at run blocking. They rank 110th nationally in rushing offense. They have a pretty good running back in Tyler Goodson, but he's only rushed for 100 yards twice in this season. That's once against Kent State, once against Northwestern. So that's a surprise to see because, you know, Iowa really wants to run the football. But the offensive line has also struggled in pass protection too. They gave up a combined 10 sacks in their 2 losses to Purdue and Wisconsin, and they're averaging about 3 sacks allowed per game. So really struggling to protect the quarterback. They do have a fairly decent receiving core. They have 7 different players that have had at least 1 receiving touchdown this season. So they spread it out a little bit, but a lot of it's just possession receivers, guys trying to dink and dunk their way down the field. I mean, their leading receiver is a tight end named Sam Laporta, and he leads the team in receptions and receiving yards. So it's not an explosive passing game by any means. But I mean, if you give them room, they'll take an inch and eventually get to the end zone. So Andy, what concerns you most about this Iowa offense, if there is something to be concerned about?
Yeah. I mean, the main concern I think we both have is that, as you said, for whatever reason, this is Brian Ferentz's Super Bowl every year. He hates PJ Fleck with a passion of 1,000 suns. And so if there's anything creative in this Iowa offensive bag, they're going to find it and they're going to pull it out against the Gophers. You know, so I think PJ Fleck and Joe Rossi have to be ready for just about anything. As you said, you know, their typical vaunted rushing offense hasn't been that good. The Gophers did an okay job shutting down the run late against Illinois, but they still let Brown run for, you know, quite a bit in the first half. And Tyler Goodson has that ability. If Minnesota can't stop the run, there's no reason why Tyler Goodson can't average 4 or 5 yards a carry in the first couple of quarters. And like you said, before you know it, you're down 14-0 again, and good luck clawing back from that. You know, I have less worries on the passing game, but you know, I think watching those linebackers for Minnesota against the Iowa tight end will be a key matchup. We've seen other teams against Minnesota slip out tight ends, whether it be on tight end screens or things like that, where they've gotten good 20-yard chunks of offense. And so it's going to be key for the Gophers to go up and basically go toe to toe with them and you know, keep things tight. I mean, to be brutally honest, the pressure is pretty much on Iowa in this game. So the longer that Minnesota can keep this a tie game or a low scoring 7-3 game, I think it benefits them. Iowa's the one that's definitely going to be feeling the pressure at home. You know, you're at Kinnick, where the Gophers haven't won since 1999. You know, the over-under right now is only 37.5, so nobody has any expectations that this is going to be an offensive shootout. So you just got to go in there and hold your serve on defense, and if this ends up being an ugly, you know, 13-10 game, so be it. You just are going to have to figure out some way where you can hold the Iowa defense in check and see if you can squeeze out some points. I think we're both in agreement that turnovers are going to be absolutely huge in this game. As you'll probably explain a little bit about the Iowa defense, they live off the turnover. And so protecting the ball, not fumbling, not having Tanner Morgan throw horrible passes for interceptions is going to be a massive, massive key on Saturday.
Yes, looking at the Iowa defense, I'm already anticipating a minimum of 2 interceptions for Tanner Morgan. I mean, Iowa's had just a staggering number of interceptions, I think 19 in 9 games, which is a tops in the Big Ten, probably the tops in the country, I would imagine. And there's obviously a bit of luck involved in that, but this is also a veteran secondary that's just rarely out of position. They've got 2 senior quarterbacks. Matt Hankins has 3 interceptions. They're actually getting Riley Moss back this weekend. He's our other senior quarterback who has 4 interceptions and 2 pick sixes this season. He's been out since suffering a knee sprain against Penn State, but this is, of course, great timing. He's making his return this week. They also have a senior safety named Jack Corner. He's got 2 interceptions. They're Dane Belton, who's kind of their slot corner. They call it the cash position. It's the hybrid linebacker defensive back position. He's also tied with Riley Moss for the team lead in 4 interceptions. So really, anywhere you throw the ball, there's a guy that's just threatening to take it away from you. So, and really, just across this defense, I struggle to see where the advantage is for Minnesota. I mean, this is just an elite defense. They're top 10 in rushing defense. Passing defense, a little bit looser. They're ranked 38th in passing defense. They allow about 200 passing yards per game, but they're also 5th in scoring defense, averaging about 15.7 points allowed per game. So looking at the matchup between Minnesota and Iowa, you know Minnesota under Mike Sanford just wants to run the ball, and where they really struggle is when they can't run the ball and he's going to force them to do something else. I have to imagine Iowa is going to stack that box and dare Tanner Morgan to try his luck with their secondary. I just don't see how, barring some huge creative game plan for Minnesota, I really struggle to see them putting much points against this offense. Do you see them having much success? Is there any vulnerabilities on this defense, Andy, that you think they might be able to exploit, or are we hoping for a miracle here?
I mean, honestly, I mean, if you've looked at the last little bit, no. I mean, it's going to have to take an incredibly creative game plan from Mike Sanford, and to be brutally honest, I don't think we've seen that yet this year. Maybe Purdue a little bit, but for the most part, no, we haven't really seen that. As you said, you know, Iowa has a really good run defense, and you're exactly right. They are opportunistic in the secondary, and they would love nothing more than to basically say, all right, we'll throw 8 in the box. Tanner Morgan, you beat us. And you try not to make a mistake, and you try not to throw a bad ball, because if you throw a bad ball, we're gonna take it away from you. I think Iowa would love to play that game, and so it's going to take some big-time creativity from Sanford and company to try and figure that out. Is that a possibility? Sure. I mean, weirder things have happened. But as we said, ball control is going to be absolutely massive. If the Gophers are going to win this game, we're probably going to have 2019 Tanner Morgan levels of accuracy and completion. 2020 and 2021 Tanner Morgan probably isn't going to cut it. And if that's the case, my guess is Floyd spending another long year in Iowa City.
And I mean, not even 2019 Tanner Morgan could beat them in 2019. So yeah, I mean, six straight losses to Iowa. I wish I felt more confident in this and that they could win this game, just because I hate Iowa, and man, losing seven straight to them. I mean, we're well on our way to another embarrassing losing streak to a rival. So, but we'll get into predictions later. Let's turn the page a little bit here. Some happy news: Ben Johnson is undefeated. He got his first win as Minnesota's head basketball coach. They beat Kansas City 71-56. I did not watch the game. I don't know anything about basketball besides the basics. Andy, were you able to watch the game, or do you have any thoughts just from the highlights or anything like that?
Yeah, I was not also able to watch the game. Thank you, BTN Plus. But, I caught the gist on Twitter. It looked like basically, you know, this team, they don't have a ton of talent. I mean, let's be honest. This team is going to struggle when it comes to playing teams in the Big Ten that have much more talent than them, but they got some heart. They got in a little bit of trouble midway through the second half, and they battled back. Ended at the end of the game on a 17-4 run. They've got some kids. Jameson Battle, the George Washington transfer, Minnesota native, led the way with 18 points. He's got some move. He can drive. He can hit from beyond the arc. Peyton Willis, you know, in his first game at point guard, six assists, three turnovers. It's a 2-1 ratio. You pretty much would take that from him. And EJ Stevens with 13 points as well. The Gophers shot 46% from the game, which is good enough to keep them in the game against Kansas City. They're going to need to bring those numbers up if they're going to compete in the Big Ten. But, all in all, it's a good first win. The deck is going to be stacked against them, but these are the games you got to take advantage of, and you got to outplay it. I mean, Minnesota, even with their motley crew of transfers or whatever, should have more talent than Kansas City should. We're going to have several other non-conference games at the barn where Minnesota should take advantage. And they did that, to open up the season, as we'll get to in a little bit. The women, not so much. But, it's a good first win, and now they get a test going to their Asheville Championship event this weekend out in Asheville, North Carolina. They get Western Kentucky 5:30 on Friday on ESPNU. And then, depending upon how that game goes, we'll get either South Carolina or Princeton on Sunday. Obviously, I don't know much about Western Kentucky. South Carolina, in theory, you're looking at a better Power 5 team. And Princeton's a tough Ivy League team. So, my guess is all three of these teams are probably going to be a step up from Kansas City. And we'll get a better idea of just where this team might be.
And, credit where credit is due. They're 1-0, which is more than what Nebraska's men's basketball team can say. I mean, they lost 75-74 to Western Illinois. There may be a little competition at the bottom of the Big Ten this year. It may not be for certain that Minnesota finishes last, but I think to your point, too, we'll kind of figure out how good or if this team is any good as we go here. I think it's going to be kind of a game-to-game thing just to see, hopefully, if this team can improve, see what their ceiling is, see what their floor is. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to watch the season unfold with them. They got the season off to a good start. I can't quite say the same for the women's basketball team, who lost to Jacksonville 69-66. Andy, your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, this one was bad. I was listening to this one in the car. Justin Gard, shout out to JG. I know he occasionally listens. With a good job, his first job is the new play-by-play voice of the Gopher women's basketball team. What can you say? Year four of Lindsey Whalen, and they're still making the same mistakes. This team, as if you've listened to our podcast before, you saw our, this team is a horrible fourth quarter team. And you would think that Lindsey Whalen would have somehow figured this out by now. They can't hold leads. The Gophers had a 5-point lead after the third quarter and were outscored 24-16 in the fourth quarter. You can't lose at home to a team that went 4-16 in the Atlantic Sun a year ago. You just can't. This is unacceptable. And the problem comes down to the way the Gophers play. They don't have any threats in the paint. Anything in the paint is there to take up space and occasionally get a rebound. The Gophers are basically led by a three-guard offense, Sarah Scalia, Jasmine Paul, and either Deja Winters, who actually had a pretty good game in her first game at Minnesota after grad transferring in from North Carolina A&T. Scalia led the way with 25 points. But the team, as a team, they only shot 34% from the field. That's not going to cut it. They had 19 turnovers, 7 in the fourth quarter. And you're getting turnovers from your best two guards. Paul and Scalia were throwing the ball away in the fourth quarter. That can't happen. I mean, it just can't.
I know that they're only one game into the season, but in your mind, how hot is Lindsey Whalen C right now?
Well, one of the reasons why it's not that hot is Wednesday was National Signing Day, and the Gopher women's team signed their highest-ranked recruiting class in school history. Whalen's 4-player recruiting class, all from the Twin Cities suburbs. Depending upon where you look, if you look at the Junior All-Stars, which is one of the ranking systems that ranks women's college basketball players, they have the Gophers as the 4th-best class in the nation. ESPN has Minnesota's class as the 7th-best class in the nation. You've got, you know, a couple of guards. Mara Braun from Wayzata is right about on average, upper 20s, low 30s, ranked guard in the nation. Amaya Battle from Hopkins, the first Hopkins recruit that the Gopher women have gotten in God knows how long, which when Hopkins is in and out the best program for high school basketball in the state, you might want to try and get some of their players. Mallier Heyer is a 6'1 forward from Chaska, and then Nia Holloway from Eden Prairie. So Lindsey Whalen got 4 in-state players, basically in-state players 2, 3, 4, and 5. Number one player was Maya Najee, and she went to Arizona following her brother Zeke, who went there. She decided to not stay in state and head out. But Lindsey Whalen got the 2, 3, 4, and 5 best players in the state of Minnesota. They equal a top 10 national recruiting class. So now we just have to see them turn this recruiting talent into playing talent. I mean, unfortunately, these 4 girls aren't going to see the floor till next fall, but you've got to get them now ready for college basketball. And that's the one thing I don't think we've necessarily seen yet from Lindsey Whalen is the player improvement. The improvement, you know, Sarah Scalia was a decent recruit and Jasmine Russell was a decent recruit. They've got a couple other Alana Smith, is a 5-star player out of Ohio. Caddy Sissoko is a 5-star player who they got transferring from Syracuse. Neither one of them have lived up to that 5-star hype on the court as of yet. And so that's the one thing we haven't seen yet is can Lindsey Whalen take this talent and mold this talent and turn it into a team that can compete on the floor? You know, getting off to a really bad start with a loss at home to Jacksonville is not a good way to kick off your 4th season. And unfortunately, if you read my season preview I read earlier, that was supposed to be the easy game. The Gophers have the hardest schedule in the Big Ten this year. They started off with Jacksonville, which should have been an easy win. They play at Arizona State Friday night, and they come home for a couple of quick games against Washington, D.C. teams, George Washington and American. And then they go to the women's battle for Atlantis down in the Bahamas. They play a school, UConn? Are they any good at women's basketball? I haven't heard their name recently.
Just a little bit. Logan.
Just a little bit. You know, so it's like, you know, they've got North Carolina on the schedule, and then we get to the Big Ten. I think reading the Gophers' schedule, they have something like 13 teams on their schedule that played in the NCAA tournament last year, and their opponent's winning percentage is like 575. You know, obviously things can change, as we saw a Jacksonville team that went 4-16 get a big non-conference win over the Gophers. But yeah, the fact that they struggled in their home opener, this team's going to live or die on shooting from range. If they have a good game shooting from behind the arc, they can probably compete with almost anybody. If they're ice cold from behind the arc, there's going to be a lot of long, long games in this team's future. So, long story short, yes, if the Gophers do continue to struggle, the hot seat for Lindsey Whalen should definitely start to be picked up. But if you look at our conference peers, Wisconsin fired their women's basketball coach last year. He got 5 years. Mark Coyle's not going to fire a Minnesota legend after 4 years, especially with this recruiting class. So Whalen will be here at least one more year to try and take these highly talented players and turn them into something that can compete on the court.
All right, so keep your eyes on Lindsey Whalen's squad, see if they can improve, and hopefully next year capitalize on that recruiting class. But yeah, both basketball teams worth keeping an eye on. See how good they are this year.
The Sky U podcast is proud to be sponsored by Home Field Apparel, the good brand. You've heard us talk before about how excited we were to get them as a sponsor, and we continue to be excited because as fall approaches, they have restocked their crew neck and hoodie sweatshirts. There's a Sweetscript Minnesota sweatshirt out there right now waiting for you to pick one up. If you have not already shopped for the first time at Home Field Apparel, make sure to go to homefieldapparel.com and use code DAILYGOPHER at checkout for 15% off your order. It's not just Minnesota gear. There are sweet stickers from all sorts of historic logos across NCAA. I have a Tulane Green Wave sticker that I've had my eye on that I got to go pick up. Whatever it is, make sure to get over to homefieldapparel.com, find it for yourself, feel good in it, look good in it, and enjoy every moment with your new gear. That's homefieldapparel.com, code DAILYGOPHER.
Switching gears a little bit, Minnesota football is not the only ones taking on the Hawkeyes this week. Volleyball faces Iowa on Thursday, and from what I understand, this is a team that's not on a six-game losing streak to the Hawkeyes. Is that correct, Andy?
Yeah, you want to talk about the inverse. We said you know, Minnesota hasn't won in Kinnick since 1999. The Gophers have dominated the Iowa Hawkeyes in volleyball. Minnesota has not lost to Iowa in volleyball since 1995. They've won 45 straight matches against the Hawkeyes.
God, I wish that was for football.
Yeah, really? Oh, isn't that amazing? So, yeah, the Gophers Thursday night head to Iowa City. Match at 6 o'clock on BTN Plus. The Gophers should absolutely destroy the Hawkeyes. Iowa fired their coach earlier last week. They're 4-20 on the year, 2-12 or something like that in the Big Ten. So they're absolute hot garbage. It should be an incredibly easy win for the Gophers. They are on a 5-match winning streak, and they've knocked off three top 10 teams in that list. They beat Ohio State twice. They were number 6 when they beat them the first time, 7 when they beat them the second time last week in Columbus. They knocked off number 6 Nebraska at home. Last Saturday, they knocked off Illinois. Hey, a Gopher team that can beat Illinois in the road on Champaign. And so this Iowa game should be easy, and then it sets up what's going to be an epic finish. The Gophers will have 5 matches left starting Sunday. They host number 9 Purdue at the Barn. And they still have to host Wisconsin in a week and finish at Penn State, both ranked in Wisconsin number 4, Penn State number 15. So the Gophers have a really tough task down the stretch here, but if they can stay hot, right now they're just one game back of Wisconsin, Nebraska for first place in the Big Ten. They moved up to number 11 in the NCAA RPI this week, which is good. Top 16 usually means the top 16 seeds in the NCAA tournament, meaning the Gophers would be able to host the first and second round at the PAV, which is always your goal for a power Big Ten team. So the Gophers volleyball team's in a pretty good position right now, and hopefully they can close well their last 6 games here down the stretch.
Well, go volleyball. That's where it's at this year. I hope people continue to support them and check them out. Yeah, good luck on the strong finish there. And moving on to hockey, I understand they split with Wisconsin this weekend. Is that accurate?
Yeah, the Gophers went into Madison this past weekend, lost 4-3 Friday night in overtime and got a 4-1 win on Saturday. Saturday, the Gophers got a bit of a scare, went up 3-0 early in the first period when Jack LaFontaine sort of had a Wisconsin player sort of push his leg into the goalpost. He curled up and was in a lot of pain, had to be helped off the ice with about 5 minutes left in the first period. And you could see every single Minnesota fan just go, oh, bleep. As basically right now Minnesota's backup goalie is Justin Close, who's come in and played three portions of periods in his college career, is not really equipped to play significant time. Brennan Boynton, the Gopher freshman, who was supposed to be the backup goaltender, has missed most of the first month of the season with various injuries and things like that. Luckily, LaFontaine made a miraculous recovery and came back to start the second period and played the rest of the game and played great in the Gophers' 4-1 win. So Minnesota still leads. They're on top of the Big Ten. Through the first 2 weeks of conference play, they get a 6-2 Ohio State team at Mariucci this weekend, 6:30 Friday, 5 o'clock Saturday, both games on Bailey Sports North. The Buckeyes, actually, a little bit of a surprise. They were expected to finish dead last in the Big Ten, and they've been pretty good so far this season. So hopefully Minnesota can continue to, you know, you'd love to basically get sweeps against these teams at home. They get Ohio State this weekend, Penn State next weekend, both at Mariucci. So, you know, it's one of those things where you'd love to see them take at least three of the next four games, and if you could go 4-for-4 before heading up to North Dakota for a Thanksgiving weekend series in Grand Forks, everybody would be pretty happy with that, I think.
We got to protect Jack LaFontaine at all costs because he's the only hockey player I can name at this point. So I don't want to learn another name. I just want to keep on Jack LaFontaine. It's just one of his names, just fun to say. And he, by all accounts, seems to be a great goalie. So
just hopefully. a quick update on the women. They were off last week. They play a non-conference series at home this week against RIT, Rochester Institute of Technology, which I'm sure when this game was, the series was added to the schedule, RIT was actually a somewhat decent team. They're currently the worst team in women's college hockey in the country. They are 0-12 this year. They got swept by St. Thomas, brand new to Division I St. Thomas. The Colgate team that Minnesota went into Colgate's barn and swept on the road beat this RIT team 8-1 and 13-0 about a month ago. So if the Gophers do not win both of these games by bare minimum 5 or 6 goals, we've got some issues. So both those games at Ritter this weekend, I think, what is it? It's 6 o'clock Friday night, 4 o'clock Saturday afternoon. So if you want to see Minnesota have, in theory, what should be their biggest offensive explosion of the year, head down to Ritter this weekend.
Famous last words, what should be their biggest offensive explosion of the year? That's just never worked out in Minnesota's favor when you expect them to do well. So, but you know, hopefully they take care of business. That should about wrap up our preview of athletics this week. Moving on, unfortunately, to predictions for the Iowa game on Saturday. Andy, how optimistic are you feeling right now?
So I will say there is a slight chance out there that at Mike Sanford has actually taken all this criticism to heart and is currently working up one incredible creative game plan. And in fact, College Football News sort of agrees with that. And they do point out that for whatever reason, the Gophers have been really good on the road this year. I mean, they went into Colorado and blew out the Buffaloes, had no problem in Northwestern, looked good at Purdue. You know, they've made a much better road team than they have been a home team. In fact, they actually predict a 23-17 Minnesota win over the Hawkeyes. Of course, their wow. confidence rating out of that is a 1.5 out of 5. So, but, I mean, they make some points. Iowa's offense is putrid. The Gopher offense, of course, has also been putrid. But, you know, we've seen them turn around after a bad game. They went from Bowling Green to Purdue. That was good. We've seen this before. But I just don't see it happening. As we talked about, I think Iowa is good enough, and they're gonna stack the box, and they're gonna say, okay, run into this 8-9 man box every time, and they're going to make Tanner Morgan try and beat Iowa on 2nd and 8, 3rd and 7. And from everything we've seen this season, that generally doesn't go well. And so I'm going to agree that it's going to be just an absolute ugly slap fight. But based off of a couple of turnovers that Iowa was turned into points, I think the Hawkeyes are going to probably pull this one out. I'm going to say 23-10.
Yeah, I can't say I disagree. You know, I can see the possibilities. I think it's possible that they have a chance that they can win this game, but the probability is extremely low in my mind. And there's just too many ifs that need to happen for them to win this game. I think part of my prediction too is just kind of stealing myself for a loss, because I hate the Hawkeyes. I don't want to get my hopes up that they're going to win. I get my hopes up, and then they're going to lose 7 straight, and I'm just going to be pissed all weekend. But I've got Iowa 21, Minnesota 0. I'm just going, it's just not happening for me. So
0? You don't have them scoring any points.
I've got 0. There's nothing about this matchup with their defense that bodes well with me. And it's definitely recency bias after the way they played against Illinois. The thing is, Illinois' defense is really not that great. As much as they struggled against them, I can only imagine Iowa's defensive coordinator is just chomping at the bit to line up against this offense. And that's just more of a lack of faith in Mike Sanford. I just think part of me hopes that if they do lose, it's a wake-up call situation for Fleck, where he sees these 3 performances by Mike Sanford and says, hey, maybe there's something here that I should fix. But, yeah, I'm going Iowa 21, Minnesota 0. But, again, part of that's just kind of stealing myself against a loss. But, you know, that's why they play the games. We'll see what happens on Saturday. But this is where we'll bid you adieu, and hopefully next week we'll have a full crew. But thanks for, if you made it this far, sticking it out with me and Andy. Row the boat, Sky Ma, go Gophers.
Go Gophers, row the boat.